Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed...
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com. Join Josh and Chuck, the guys who bring you stuff you should know, as they take a trip around the world to help you get smarter in a topsy-turvy economy. Check out the all-new Super Stuff Guide to the Economy from HowStuffWorks.com, available now exclusively on iTunes.
Hello there, everybody. It's time for Tech Stuff. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. And as usual, I have sitting right here next to me, senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there.
Except today, you're going to have to picture this in your head because we're talking about pictures.
Again, we just did this with the megapixels.
True.
I was even going to say, can you picture that? And then I realized, wait, no, I already did that. So
someday your prince will come.
Yeah, nice. I get it. Yeah, prince. P-R-I-N-T-S. See, Paulette there did a pun.
Yeah.
Let's listen for him to do another one. He's got two down.
No. I'm stopping here because we have to get into our digital camera tricks.
Right. And tips.
And tips.
Yes. When we did the megapixel podcast, we actually had several people write in and thank us for it. They were people who were shopping for digital cameras, and they were happy to hear that, you know, megapixels are not necessarily the end all be all when it comes to shopping for a camera. I mean, it's an important consideration, but not the only one.
No.
And so we thought we'd share some information about ways to use your digital camera effectively and get the best out of it. And away we go. You want me to start?
Go right ahead.
Okay. So one of the big issues with taking pictures with any kind of camera, really, but digital cameras in particular, are you'll see like pictures will come out a little blurry, or it looks a little off.
Yep.
It's because you really need to steady yourself before you take a picture. I mean, this is just very basic stuff. Taking a picture with one hand, that's probably going to give you the worst picture possible for that particular snapshot. I mean, you might get lucky and have nerves of steel. But really, you should use both hands. If you can prop yourself against something to hold yourself steady, that might be even better. And of course, the best choice of all is to use something like a tripod or, have you seen the Gorilla Pods?
The Gorilla Pods?
Yeah, Gorilla Pods. Okay. This is something that I think is uber cool. Gorilla Pods are special tripods. They have articulated legs. Each leg is a series of ball joints, really, and you can use it to set your camera on uneven surfaces to create an even plane when you're taking pictures.
Uh-huh.
And you can even wrap them around objects, like, say, a lamppost. So you wrap the little legs of the tripod around the lamppost, and you can hold the camera up higher than you would be able to stand. And of course, the best part is if you use the timer on your camera, you can be in your own pictures. So you've effectively turned the world into your own photographer. You can use this little Gorilla Pod to hold up your camera wherever you like, pretty much, as long as there's a surface or vertical structure that you can attach it to.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it. And they have different models for different kinds of cameras. Everything from your basic little compact point and shoot to a full sized professional camera. Neat things. So there's a tip for you. Make sure you keep your camera nice and steady. And if possible, use whatever is at your disposal in the area. And that way you can get a much sharper picture.
Yeah, speaking as a former newspaper reporter at a small paper, we had to do a little bit of everything. Writing, editing, paste up, layout, photography. I could tell you that, if you don't happen to have a tripod handy, especially in events where people are doing a lot of moving around or you need to pick up and move quickly, say for example, sports,
mm-hmm.
You can always use yourself. You know, if you can get yourself in a steady position or lean against something and steady your arm, just having a pole or something to kind of lean up against and take some of the, humanity out of it.
Yeah, the jittery.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That'll go a long way. And, another thing that I was thinking about, just that you suggested about blurry pictures, light has a lot to do with it.
Yes.
You're going to have to keep in mind if you're using, especially, using a digital camera, that the less light you have, the more likely it's going to have a problem focusing. So it's going to try and compensate for the light, the lack of light in the room. And when it does that, it's going to leave the shutter open a little bit longer. And if you're moving, you're going to blur the picture.
Right.
So that's going to be especially important to try to keep steady when you're in a low light situation because of that problem.
Yeah, you can actually adjust the shutter speed on many cameras, so you could theoretically make the shutter move faster, but in a low light environment, that may mean the camera cannot get enough light for that picture to come out very well. But there are ways to fix that in post, as we like to say. So really, when it comes to lighting and if you become familiar with some photo editing software, you might be able to compensate for dim lighting a little better than you could for, say, a blurry picture.
True.
So
true.
If you have to choose between the two, I would go with making the shutter speed a little faster. And dealing with the dim condition rather than having to try and compensate for a blurry picture. But here's the nice thing about digital cameras.
Oh yeah.
You can see what the picture looks like immediately after you take it. And it's in a digital format. You don't have to keep it. You can delete it right then and there and you can keep on taking pictures. So here's another tip for you.
Uh-huh.
Try out your camera's settings. Now, I'm really guilty of this. I tend to use 3 or 4 settings a lot because I happen to know they work pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't necessarily try all of them. And I remember I was using my digital camera at an event, and I had accidentally changed the settings because it used a little wheel to set the settings, And
right.
I accidentally thumbed – when I opened it up, I thumbed the wheel to a different position.
Mm-hmm.
And my pictures came out very, very well. And I was like, wow, I've gotten a lot better at taking photos. And I was like, wait a minute, this isn't on the setting. And then I realized that the setting I was using was not necessarily the most effective one for the situation I was in. So my suggestion is test out your different settings and do it in several different environments. So, just play with it. Find out which settings seem to work in the best situations. So for things where you're doing a lot of fast action and bright lights, you could make the shutter speed much shorter then. And if it's in a dim situation, find out if it's better to keep a longer shutter speed or if it's better to just try and deal with the dim images in a photo editing program later on down the line.
Yep. Yep. That's true. And you know, it's funny that you would say that, talking about, different settings on your camera. I mean, that little book that they give you in the box with the camera, they'll actually tell you what all those buttons and gizmos do.
You are kidding me.
But, and this isn't really a tip or trick, but this is just sort of a thing to think about. And I don't think a lot of us think about it. I think we, you know, haul our camera off to shoot something at our, kids' soccer game or, you know, to some other event, family event. And we shoot pictures and then we just don't think about it. You know, this one of those cool things about a digital camera. You can shoot as much as you want. So why not take your camera out when there's nothing riding on it? You know, there's nothing big going on. There's nothing to ruin if you go out and play around with your camera settings. And it's not like you have to go spend a lot of money on film developing. You know, it's a digital camera. You can delete everything if you want to.
You could buy an extra smart card for a fairly low amount, comparatively speaking. And then you even have a couple smart cards that you can swap out and you know, fill up one and you're like, well, let's try taking those same photos, but on a different resolution setting.
Right.
That's another good tip is if you are finding that, that your camera, capacity fills up far too quickly, it might be that you might have set the quality standards a little too high. it turns out like this goes back to the megapixels discussion we had earlier. If you set it to the highest settings and start taking pictures, those individual pictures are going to be very large files. And won't necessarily make your picture look better either, unless you're taking something like a very wide photo and you want the ability to zoom in afterward to a specific point and you don't want the resolution to suffer because of that. If you want to print a really large print, in either of those cases, then yeah, you probably want to use the highest resolution possible. But otherwise, you probably don't need the highest resolution, and you'll be able to take far more pictures that way because the file sizes will be much smaller.
That's true. And, you know, I was thinking, I was actually reading on a post by Rick Michleski of MacLife. I hope I got his name right. He did an essay on MacLife.com about sports photography because he was shooting pictures of his daughter's rugby game. Apparently she played for Stanford.
Wow.
And he was talking about shooting practice photos. But what he said was you need to – and this is again, sort of not a camera trick, but it kind of is. Mm-hmm. He said one thing that – to do is if you're going to shoot something like sports photography, watch the people, like find out who the players to watch are. If you know number 14 is the playmaker, well, get yourself in a situation where you're going to be able to get a clear shot at this particular person and kind of watch for a few minutes to see what he or she is going to do. Because if you get an idea from body language that something big's about to happen, that they're going to make a break for the ball or something like that, you can set yourself up to get a great shot. And the better you can focus on their face, even more so than the action involved, you might get a really fantastic sports photo that you might not have gotten. But on the other hand, it also helps to have the right equipment because some cameras aren't set up to do sports photography. You need, you know, the ability to shoot a lot of photos quickly.
Right.
Sort of like the Casio camera that we saw at CES 2008 that shoots 60 frames per second.
Right. Yeah, it's usually called burst photography.
Exactly. Something that will shoot that and it will even shoot photos before you. If you hold down the, you know, sort of half press the shutter button, it'll actually start shooting photos before. So it's sort of like a TiVo. You can sort of back up and look at some of the photos before. So if you happen to be just a fraction of a second off and go, oh, I missed a shot, you can back up and look to see maybe you actually did get it.
That scares me. It's a camera that knows you want to take a picture.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing about that is that's not you. That's really the camera itself. It's not a trick. that you can learn to do that.
No, it's a, the trick is getting the right camera.
Yeah, spending the money for it. And that was a at the time of release, I think they've come out with a camera that supplants that even. It was $1,000 worth of camera. And a lot of us can't afford that.
Yeah, there's a $600 Casio now that takes, I think, 40 a second. Yeah. So it's a little slower, but it's also significantly cheaper. But yeah, the wonderful thing about that is, of course, you can flip through all those different photos and, you know, there, you might think, wow, did I catch that one moment? And it, there's a good chance you did if it's taking that many, a second. In fact, you may find like five or six pictures that you really have trouble deciding on between the group of them. I've got a similar, very, very basic tip,
okay,
that you kind of touched on there,
uh-huh,
which is that if you are preparing to take a photo and you know that something is about to happen, and, you know, this happened to me a lot before I realized there was a very simple solution, where I would take a photo of something, but I would get the moment immediately after the moment I wanted to catch, hold down the button halfway. That, yep, will prepare your camera. It'll lock focus. So it'll find the, it'll essentially, it focuses on the central figure that's in the frame. It'll lock the focus and prepare for a photo. So when that moment happens, all you have to do is press it down the rest of the way and it'll take the picture.
Mm-hmm.
This will save you the heartache of, wow, I got the back of my daughter's leg in the frame while she ran by because,
right,
I was preparing a second too late. And in a similar vein, let's say that you want to take a picture and you don't want to do the normal, like, let's have the person standing in the middle of the frame of the photo. You want something a little cooler. You want them to be off to the side of the frame and you want to have a little bit of the background in there. But every time you try and take the photo, you're getting the background in focus, not the person you want to capture. My suggestion then is first frame the picture as if that person is in the center.
Mm-hmm.
Half and press that button halfway down. That'll lock the focus. Then you can adjust your position so that you are pointing in you've got the picture framed the way you really want it.
Right.
And the focus will stay the same. You can press the button the rest of the way down. You got your picture.
There you go. I actually have two that sort of relate to the things that you touched on just then. One was, I was reading some of David Pogue of the New York Times.
Right.
He had post where he talked about some different things that you can do to improve your photography. And, I have at CES 2008 again, I had my little Olympus 2.1 megapixel, which shoots pretty good photos, really. But, there's a problem. You know, it's an older point and shoot, and I kept having trouble getting the moment. Like I would set up and I got where I wanted to go and I'd push the button and nothing would happen. Well, that's called shutter lag, and half pressing the button down and having the camera focus also reduces the shutter lag time, mm-hmm, because the camera is ready to take a picture. So when you completely press the button down the rest of the way, it should go ahead and take the picture without that extra shutter lag because the camera is not trying to figure out what's going on.
Right.
But, I read in National Geographic and, you know, they're reasonably decent with their photography.
Yeah. They know
stuff.
A thing or two about taking pictures.
Maybe even three.
Maybe.
They were suggesting that when you're composing your picture, you should imagine that the screen is divided up into 9 segments, basically like a tic-tac-toe board. And, you want to center your subject at the intersection of the lines. Basically, it's called the rule of thirds, and you're trying to get them in that position, to basically help you compose the picture better and get more of a better composition. You know, and hopefully you won't cut off the top of their head or
right,
something.
Well, that's actually really important because, you know, all the tips and tricks aren't going to help you if you don't develop your own skill as a photographer.
That's true.
You might
practice.
Right. You might get some nice pictures, but you're not going to maximize your use of that camera without a little work on your part. I've got another basic tip that I learned about while researching this. It's something I did not know.
Yeah.
If you wanted to take a portrait photo of someone.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I read was that the best way to take a portrait photo is, let's say you have a camera that has 3 to 5 times zooming capability.
Mm-hmm.
The suggestion was to zoom all the way in, like as tight as possible, and then hold the camera vertically so you get the vertical portrait picture, and then move toward your subject until your subject fills the frame the way you want and then take the photo that way.
Uh-huh.
So to actually zoom in all the way. Now, if you have a camera that has a more powerful zoom, like an 8 to 10 times, you would only zoom in about halfway for that. But that this will help you get a better photo of your subject. And I didn't know that. Another good one that I didn't know is that if you're taking a picture outside, you may want to still turn your flash on.
That's true.
It can help the flash from your camera and the ambient light. Your camera can take all of that into consideration. It's called fill-in flash.
Mm-hmm.
And this will help you if you want to take a picture of a subject that perhaps the lighting source is to the side or maybe slightly behind that person or object. The flash can help fill that in. However, you have to keep in mind, camera flash has a very limited range. Anything beyond about 10 feet is not going to be effective. So you want to keep that fairly close.
So you mean if you took your little point and shoot with the little itty bitty flash and you go to, say, oh, I don't know, the Olympics and you're in the nosebleed section and you have the flash turned on and you're trying to get something that's going on down on the field, the flash might not illuminate that?
Yeah, I was actually thinking of WrestleMania. If you're at WrestleMania and you are in the nosebleed section and you want to get a picture of The Undertaker as he delivers a tombstone piledriver to John Cena, Thug Life, then that flash is probably not going to help, despite the fact that every time I watch WrestleMania, all I see are flashes in the background. People cut it out.
Actually, it's kind of cool looking for those of us watching at home. But
yeah. Anyway. For those of us who actually have attended the event, it's just really annoying.
Okay. All right. You seem to have a personal investment in this. And I'm just going
to
leave it alone.
I happen to enjoy the art of the squared circle.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
I had another one about an outdoor shot.
Okay.
Polarizing filters.
Oh, yeah.
So let's say that you want to take a shot of a scene that's really, really bright. There's maybe some glare. I took a cruise up in Alaska several years ago, and there was this gorgeous glacier. I wanted to take a picture, but it was a cloudless day.
Uh-huh.
And the problem was that the ocean water, the glacier, and the sky were almost all the same color. It was this very, very, very whitish, bluish color. And It was really hard to tell where the ocean ended, the sky began, and where the glacier was at all. A polarizing filter can help take that down a little bit so you get a little better definition. But let's say that you have a regular little point and shoot camera. You know, you don't have the polarizing filter. What do you do then? Well, if you happen to have a nice pair of sunglasses,
mm-hmm.
this can actually work. You can hold the sunglasses in front of the lens of your camera and take a photo there, and it will act as a polarizing lens. You do want to make sure that you don't have any of the edges of the sunglasses in the frame when you take the picture, though. But it does work. It's not as good as a professional filter, not by a long shot, but it can work in a pinch.
You know, professional filters aren't really all that expensive, and that's something else that you can do to, you know, fool around with and start seeing what kind of effects you can have with your photos. Another nice effect that a polarizing filter has that has nothing to do with any of that is if you happen to keep one on your camera and something scratches the filter, you can replace the filter, but you may not be able to replace the lens.
Right. Or if you have a camera where you can replace the lens, it's going to cost you more than a filter would.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just something to consider.
No, that's a good point.
I have a lot more tips, but we're sort of running out of time. I have a couple weird ones that I wanted to touch on.
All right. Let's hit the weird ones.
Okay. One of the other things that David Pogue said, and I find this a little strange, he said that a lampshade socket could make a good tripod mount.
Huh.
He said it happens to be the exact size of the section that you would, I guess, attach to the top of the tripod, which I'm admittedly having a little bit of difficulty visualizing. I also think it might be a good idea to unplug the light.
I was just about to say that.
but I don't, you know, I kind of don't deny it. I mean, if your camera's not heavy enough and it fits and it's unplugged and you don't electrocute yourself or anyone else or destroy your camera, it seems like it might, you know, do in a pinch. I wouldn't I don't know. I'd have trouble recommending that, but I did read it and it, you know, David Pogue suggested it. So,
you should know a thing or two.
The other weird thing. And, you know, I read a lot of tech blogs, but I read a lot of other blogs. And, one of the others, the Candy Dish blog, cause I like checking out the new sugary stuff. Oddly, Carl from the Candy Dish blog had a link today on the day that I were recording this to a Flickr set where somebody had actually used gummy bears. It stuck gummy bears to their flash, and the flash goes through, you know, the gummy bear distorts the light and makes – it's sort of like using gels. They're different colored, like a green or a red gel, and just a very odd and low-cost yet sticky solution if you happen to need that.
One wonders if fruit roll-ups would work just as well.
I don't know. You know, they can be a little harder to manage, I'm guessing, depending on the size of the flash.
I was just thinking like a fruit roll-up you could cut to the right size.
That's true. Yeah, it would be thinner than a gummy bear.
Yeah.
We might need to do some research and get back to you on this.
Yeah, if nothing else, it'll help snack time.
I know, and I could use one of those right now,
I
actually.
Could too.
So anyway.
So you're all tipped out?
Yeah, those are my weird ones.
Tips.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we hope that you found these tips helpful. I guess that just brings us to listener mail.
Seriously, dude.
Okay, so today's listener mail comes from Jose. And Jose has to say, Chris and Jonathan, I love your podcast and have heard all of them. There are a lot of myths when it comes to cables, and I'm glad that for the most part you did a lot to dispel those myths. The fact that you brought up James Randi, which is one of my favorite people, was cool too. And I happen to like Randi as well, so that was a no-brainer. But he goes on to say, one thing that you need to consider about audio and video paraphernalia is that your setup is only as good as your weakest link. Strictly from a sound quality standpoint, it doesn't do you any good to buy a cable aside from the one that comes with your stereo, because if you open up your shiny new speaker, voiding the warranty in most cases, you'll notice that the cable between the connection terminal and the actual speaker is the same cheap cable that came with the stereo. Even if you bought a $1,000 cable, your weakest link is still in the speaker, and it cancels out any advantage a better cable could have offered. Keep up the great work, guys. Jose. Thanks a lot, Jose. That's a really good point. Just like any system, it's only as strong as its weakest link. Now, if it happens to be really well-made speakers and that link is fine, then sure, your cable may end up being your weakest link. Or if it's something about the connectors themselves, that could be it. But you make a very good point. There's some things that are beyond your control, and no matter how expensive a cable you buy, it's not gonna make it sound any better.
That's kind of sorry to think about, you know, trying to imagine that you'd spend all this money on fancy equipment and the people who made the fancy equipment skimped on the inside.
Yes, so I'll be handing out pitchforks and torches after the show.
Excellent.
And if you have anything you want to say to us, any comments or suggestions or questions or even corrections, you can feel free to write us at techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And remember, we have a blog up now. It's called Tech Stuff, and you can find that right off the homepage of howstuffworks.com. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.